My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. This is episode 52 from Radioland. This marks a full year of production that we have put into this program. We certainly hope you have liked it. There's been a lot of subscribers to it, and we certainly appreciate all of that, and that shows a lot of remarkable growth on our end, and we couldn't be more excited and more proud about that. One of the things that I've wanted to do, especially as we get into our fifth season, which will be next week, starts next week, we have been wanting to add more interviews to the program, interesting people that we have encountered over the past year, and we've certainly had our few here, and just a wonderful experience that has been around, and I like being able to share with you folks some of the people that I have found fascinating. And I reached out to a guy that you very well may know. If you don't, you need to look him up. He's always joking about it. You can Google him, whatever you need to do. Josh Robert Thompson. Josh was the voice of Jeff the Robot on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson on CBS. He was the sidekick. Had a great run of shows with Craig over at CBS, and also enjoys remarkable success with his podcast. Very funny stuff indeed. And I tell you, his podcast, Joshin' Around, has been somewhat of a direct influence on how I produce From Radioland. Some of the things that he does and some of the things that he doesn't do has been a wonderful bit of advice, just listening-wise, as to how a good show is done. I highly recommend his show. He sits down with me. We talk about his podcast and how important that show has been to me.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah,
thank you.
I enjoy it. In fact, it is a bit of an inspiration for me because of the rawness of it, the fact that you're improv, I don't plan mine as a result of listening to yours. This is actually my 52nd episode that you're on.
No shit. Okay.
Yeah, one a week for a solid year, and we're about to cross that 100,000 subscriber mark. So
that's good, man.
So yeah, we're
if I can get more people to listen to mine, I'm working on it. But it's fun. It's more of a just a exercise, really. It's just kind of a fun thing to do. It's a good workout for me, just to keep busy.
Yeah, I can see that's kind of why I did mine too. I mean, when I got blown out of corporate radio, it was one of those things that I needed to, you know, kind of, a friend of mine was one that was telling me about it. He says, man, you got to get into podcasting seriously or else, you know, you're going to go crazy. And it does. It really has helped me out. I feel a lot better about being on the air, and some of the things that I do helps build my confidence up. And it's a great exercise.
Yeah, that's good, man. Yeah, you got to keep busy. You lose your mind.
yeah, I spend 75, 80 hours a week down in this hole. So, yeah, I get you as far as being busy. I just listened to your podcast on the Uber thing. I laughed out loud through all of it, but I understood exactly where you were coming from through that whole thing. Did people really freak out about you becoming an Uber driver off of that bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's first, thank you. I'm glad you like that. It's kind of fun satire for me. I think people think I'm really worked up. I mean, it was more funny to me than anything else. I think that people thought about a month out of the Late Late Show that I was driving an Uber car, and then. But what was funny to me is I had to then say that there was nothing wrong with driving an Uber car. Like then there was like a second layer of concern that I had to be worried about. Like, you know, so it's a funny world we live in. So that's why I had to do this rant about it.
I know, and your podcast is based so much in your reality too. I mean, you pull so much from what you were experiencing and everything that went with it, and I can see where it was all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, here it is, you know, people are going to freak out.
Yeah, it's, you know, I guess the more you're in the public eye, you know, you start to think about these things, just weird things that people wouldn't care about otherwise. You know, what do you mean, bro? What do you mean it sucks to be a Uber driver? Like, well, no, I didn't say it sucks to be an Uber driver. It sucks for me to be an Uber driver. You have a walk.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not get that? I don't want to be an Uber driver. But and then it actually led to one of my new stand-up bits, you know. What's cool about the podcast is that, you know, when you hear that episode, you're hearing a little chunk of what is now a new bit, which is my rant about Lyft drivers, which are the drivers that have these pink mustaches that are affixed to the front of their cars.
Yeah.
Now, the Lyft drivers are not in every area in the country, I don't think. So it's kind of a regional specific bit.
Yeah, we have them here. I know a couple of Lyft drivers and Uber drivers, and you know, they enjoy what they do, but you know, that's their thing. You know, it's, you know, it's it wouldn't be a backup plan for me. I don't have a backup plan. This is it. You're looking at it.
Right. That's what I, well, I think the bit was, what I prefer cabs. I miss the days when you sat in the back of the car and you didn't really talk to the driver. You know, now it's like this weird new age hipstery thing where I hear so many friends say, "Oh, my driver was so much fun, and we sang songs together." And I'm like, "Damn, oh, that sounds exhausting." But maybe I'm a terrible human being. I don't know, but it's funny to me anyway.
Yeah, these guys, yeah, they do. They become friends with these regular clients, and they drive around town. And they go, "Oh, you know, we'll stop in and we'll have a beer together." And it's like, I don't want my cab driver drunk. You know, that's no, part of it. You know,
yeah, that's right. I'm not getting back in the car with you, so let's just, you know, look, you're a nice guy, but I just need you to get me where I need to go.
Right.
So, anyway, but the point is, you're when you hear the podcast, you know, it's cool because you're hearing the beginnings of these bits. That's where they start for me.
Is that how you work your setups? Is it and some of your punchlines? You just what stories you're going to lead into when you're on stage?
Yeah, absolutely. It all comes out of improv, and that's the only way that jokes start to work is you have to do them in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And I can't get out to a club every single night, and so the podcast is the second best thing. And the responses to the podcasts let me know, okay, well, this works. People seem to like this bit. You know, there's certain things I know people aren't, like my preacher character. I'm always going to love that guy. And
Apostle BG is the man. I love him. I think he's awesome.
Well, he's the next podcast. I recorded a rant as Apostle BG, which was one of the most enjoyable things ever. I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to do it as myself. I'm going to just do it as Apostle BG. And so, you know. I'm glad you like that guy. He's polarizing, but I love doing it.
Well, yeah, and down here in Memphis, the buckle of the Bible Belt, if you will, you know, we get the occasional, you know, traveling revival tent shows and things like that, and they are absolutely fascinating to see how these guys work. It's a show. It is, and it's all driven around the money that comes into it, and you know, they're going to save you from your, you know, your imminent demise. But it is. That's right.
The devil's going to come get you. The devil had the keys. The devil had the keys to my Pinto, man. I need the keys back from the devil, man, because I got to get to work, man. That's how that, you know, that, I tell you what, I love that movie, The Apostle, with Robert Duvall.
Yes, yes.
It's actually one of my favorite films. It's a brilliant movie. But and Stephen King's new book is called Revival, which is about a traveling preacher who does a lot of crazy things with electricity. It's a great book. And anyway, but I like that character. I'm glad you enjoy it. It's kind of a little glimpse into my youth growing up in
I'm digging all the characters that you're pulling you're pulling into your work. I mean, I know as an impressionist, and you're awesome at that. I mean, your Morgan Freeman is wonderful. You know, all the guys that you're doing is great, and I know you've made a bit of a living on it. And I remember you saying in one of your podcasts about how you were starting to step away from that, and you were wanting to really explore more of the characters that you create. And I know people were, you know, freaking out, and there was some backlash, and it pissed you off, and it kind of pissed me off too to hear about it, because it was like, you know, hey, let the guy do what he does. I mean, if characters are what you want to do, then do it. You know, you step out there, and I think you got a lot of balls for doing it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's weird. I appreciate that, man. It is weird. It's funny. I think even more now in the internet age with Facebook, social media, with Facebook and Twitter, and people really feel like they have a stake in what you do. But, you know, like, you know, first of all, we're giving this all away for free.
Right.
That's the other new thing about this era that kind of sucks. It's like, you know, the podcast took me so long to do because it was a lot of post-production. I really like to do sound effects and music. And now I'm stripping that down so I can put more out, because the ends don't justify the means. I mean, there's no money coming in. So why am I, you know?
Right.
But, and then people want you to do it a certain way. I'm like, you know, if you're paying me, maybe, you know, I'll take requests. But you got to have somewhere to go as a creative person. You know, you got to have somewhere to go where you can just do your thing. Like on my podcast, I'm going to do shows where I play some of my thrift store records. It's just an entire episode of me saying, here's a polka album. here's another album, Cherokee Princess Ramona, an album called Wait a Little Longer, Please Jesus, the funniest album I have.
Right.
I'm going to legitimately play a track from that, and people are going to go, what is he doing? But, I mean, it's my space. It's my time. I love it. And if people enjoy it, that's cool. But if they don't, you know. You don't have to be a jerk about it, but if you don't, you can leave, and that's
right.
Fine.
Yeah, and I think that's just it. I think a lot of people that consume an art from show business don't think of it as an art. They just think that, you know, okay, funny guy, make me laugh. I want to hear the Morgan Freeman. I want to hear do all this. And it's that I don't know. There was a theory about dopamine receptors in audiences that when they, you know, when they hear the Morgan Freeman or anybody that they immediately recognize, and it's coming out of your face, and they go, oh, check this out. It's fantastic. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. And and it's easy to go, fuck you. I'd rather do something different.
Yeah. And you're right. You know, I think it's the social media thing, because as soon as you've put up a video, it's already old to people within 5 seconds. And then it's like, that's great. What else do you got? And that's kind of why I embraced Vine. I really love Vine, the Vine app, because it's a 6-second video format, and you get 6 seconds to do something, to tell a story. So I've been kind of resurrecting some of the impressions with that. That's where the Uber driver stuff came from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I was driving my car down a street near my house, and I was like, you know what? It'd be funny if I was an Uber driver and the guy in the back asked me to take him to his destination as Morgan Freeman, and I was really pissed off about it. And it's one of my favorite videos I've ever done, because I'm just kind of in the video, I'm like, yeah, okay, what's that? Jerry's house is up on the right. You know, I'm like very disappointed about it.
Yeah.
And that's the one that people, they're like, oh man, well, hey, they're like, hey, at least you're not a greeter at Walmart, you know? And I'm like, no, dude, this isn't real.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get it, man. I totally get it. And it's,
you know what it is? You know what it is? It's a demographic issue, and I realize this. Craig Ferguson's Late Late Show, for the most part, not everybody, but for the most part, had a certain demographic, which was probably 55 and older. I mean, because that's who was coming out to the stand-up shows for the most part.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but that's a pretty fair assessment. And so online, I'm now trying to appeal to the rest of the world, the younger audiences. When I play clubs, no one knows who Jeff the Robot is or what the Late Late Show is. Like when guys introduce me, when the MC introduces me, it's crickets when they say, he's the robot from...
Oh,
so,
God, yeah.
Which is great, because then I don't have built-in laughs. I have to go out there and earn the material, and I like that. I prefer to perform that way without a built-in, you know, fan base. But the truth is, it's just there's a vast audience out there that I have to try to appeal to. And I think we have the older demographic and the Ferguson demographic, and you know, really trying to like struggle with no robot and no Craig. And who's this guy? And
right.
I had a guy leave yesterday. He announced yesterday he was leaving. It was pretty funny. He was leaving because he thought I was boring and that no one wants to hear my story. So it was pretty good. It was a pretty good Facebook post.
Yeah, the 18 to 34s that are out there, that's in radio speak, that I guess that'd be the demographic that you're speaking of. They, you know, I run into them, and in a recent episode of my show, I talk about that. And I ran into this girl who was really into retro music and, you know, that whole hipster shit. And she said, have you ever heard of a band called The Doors? I just discovered them. And it's like, oh, Jesus. You know, but they don't watch TV. They don't own televisions. They don't have cable subscriptions or satellite subscriptions. Everything is, you know, on their phones and it's on their tablets. And it's...
That's right.
And this is the world that you and I are kind of finding ourselves that we have to work in without appearing like, you know, old men that are trying to be hip, you know?
That's absolutely correct. That's correct. Yeah, because that's where the demographic comes in. You get the Ferguson audience, not all of them. I have to keep saying that because some, oh, you son of a bitch. But whatever. You know, listen, most of them can't work their way around a Twitter or a Vine. I mean, Vine, people are like, there's no sound. You know, they can't.
They don't
you know,
get it.
So,
yeah.
And I'm not trying to ignore them, but I'm just saying, look, I've got to sort of spread my wings now because that audience base accounts for a very, very small group of people.
Yeah,
shockingly.
Yeah,
it's true.
Twitter just announced that they are launching a video service through their thing, and it's like 30 seconds of video at a time, and it's an onboard editor, so you don't have to go through the third-party app. So that's something that you could have some fun with, too.
That's awesome. I know Instagram does it as well, and that's hugely popular. Instagram is massive, but not so much for video. They tried, and
yeah,
people were like, we'll see how the Twitter one works out. I'm curious about that.
Speaking of video, you've been working, and I've followed what you were doing here a little bit with your show, with the characters and things that you're putting into and visualizing them and making them a real thing. How's that going?
It's great, man. The team that I put together is just stellar. These are people I worked with in public access TV for about 10 years, and when they were kids, and they were very young back then. They all went off to USC and UCLA, and they learned their film craft, and they produced my show. I fronted the bill on this one. This is the second pilot that I've made.
Yeah.
But it's, it's so good. I mean, personally, I'm so proud of this thing. It's like, puppets and stop motion animations and little model houses and spaceships and green screen. And I mean, it's such a fantastic program. I wish I could show stuff from it, but I can't right now, just because I need to keep it under wraps.
Right. Hey, you've let some pictures out though. The character with the veiny horns, which is just alarming.
Right. Yeah, Gary the Ogre.
Yeah,
Gary the Ogre is. See, the thing I had to do after the Late Late Show was change the names of some of these characters so that like CBS didn't own them. So Gary the Ogre actually became Serge, who used to call into Craig Ferguson's show, and he was like a Euro trash guy, and he would talk like this: "Hi everybody, it's me, Serge. How are you? It's great." So I thought, well, what if it was a gay ogre with penis horns? No, the penis horns was I found it at a costume shop, but. Yeah, Gary the Ogre, and then I bring George Lucas back again, because last year I did a pilot that just became sort of a web series.
Yeah.
That was very disappointing, because people were like, what is this? We don't know what to do with this. But the reason being, they didn't really know that was the guy that was the robot, and I think the team that I had working on that, they were great. This is partly my fault, is we made those videos way too long. Like, we were just sort of, like, 8 minutes is a long time to...
Oh, short, yeah, short attention spans and everything is such a big part of it. The show that you're working on, it seems like it has a kind of a Sid and Marty Krofft vibe to it. There's that really twisted, weird world that you've created. Is that the thing
exactly
you're going
for? Right. That's exactly it. Yeah, it's like, it would be like Sid and Marty Krofft made, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I play a guy that's Mr. Rogers meets Don Draper.
Yes.
Like if Mr. Rogers was an alcoholic and drank openly on the show, that's about all I can say. But it is a warped kid show, and I really hope to take it to IFC or even HBO, Adult Swim. So what's happening now is my team, they're editing the actual pilot episode, and we shot about 30 hours worth of footage.
Wow.
Because the whole thing is improvised. That was my number one rule. And the day that we shot my preacher, Apostle BG, the televangelist, we shot in a church in Pasadena. We had a full congregation. It was the greatest day ever of my life. I mean, the makeup was top notch. My buddy did all the makeup effects. So he had this bald skull cap with wisps of hair. And
yeah.
I got my tie. And and what they would do is the prop guys would set objects all around the set that I was not aware of. I told them, like, don't tell me anything.
Right.
So in the moment, these wonderfully crazy, I mean, they wheeled a kid in a wheelchair who was a friend of mine, but he looked like, he was mentally impaired, and I did some terrible things to him as the preacher, and it was really funny. He just kept drooling, and I'm like, this is great. I mean, people are going to be so upset, and they're also going to laugh a lot. George Lucas... The makeup,
the
again,
goiter, guy, that neck thing is—it's got its own personality. It seems
it really does, man. Like Greg McDougall, that's my buddy from Cleveland, who is a top effects artist. And we went back, we had a meeting like for a week about let's redesign this goiter, because we tried it last year, a couple years ago, and it was good, but he was rushed. He didn't have enough time.
Yeah.
So he sculpted this beautiful goiter that looks like a nutsack hanging off of my my chin. I mean, dude, so we're in Malibu and we're shooting on this estate to look like George Lucas's, the Lucasfilm Skywalker Ranch.
Right.
And they have these three hot girls in bikinis waiting for me around this bend. I can't see them and I didn't know they were there. I said, let's start rolling. And they said, all right, so all you're going to do is walk around that bend and then we'll see what happens. Okay. So I walk around the bend and there's three hot girls in a pool, and that was the funniest shit, just watching George Lucas sit and lord over these beautiful women, massaging me, feeding me grapes.
Right.
But again, when I played Carl Sagan, we shot in Malibu on the shores of the cosmic ocean. And I'm like, I don't even care. I don't care if like four people now even know who Carl Sagan is. I don't care. That's not, it's so funny to me that Carl Sagan walks past a dead alien body on the beach and then just steps over it and continues to talk to the camera. Is there life in other planets we may never know? I didn't know that that body was going to be there. So
yeah.
That's the kind of show it is. It's almost a show that's where they're pranking me. My own crew is like putting shit out there to mess with my head. And so they're cutting it together. That's why there's so much footage, because there's so many moments like that.
Well, yeah, because these are guys that you worked with because you talk a lot about your days in public access television and how important it was. I've spent time in a studio and you said something that really brought it home to me was, there's that moment that you go into a studio and you have it for yourself, and it's like a 9-year-old with a endless supply of meat paper and crayons, and you can create whatever you want and do whatever you want to your heart's content. And it seems like you've captured that.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, back in public access, I remember I did a late night horror movie show called Schlock Theater, and I was Lou Schlock. Hey kids, we got another real corker for you. And we'd play crappy movies, and I built this dungeon set out of cardboard and little styrofoam blocks that they used to put inside the VHS boxes at Blockbuster Video. When I worked at Blockbuster Video, we had the cover boxes. You bring up the cover and go, is this a good movie? Well, we threw those out by the thousands when DVDs came, and I just took them all to my house and glued them one by one to these pieces of cardboard and made it look like a dungeon.
Yeah.
It was great. But I remember the night, it was Halloween night, and I did a live broadcast, and I was by myself in the studio in Chino, which is like two blocks from the men's prison in this rundown studio, and it's literally midnight, and the wind is howling outside, and I'm like, all I got to do is press a switch. I got to flip a switch, and we're live on the air. Who does this? This is fantastic. This is before YouTube. This is, before what we're doing, this Google chat and YouTube has a live video. It wasn't like that. We were like in the air. It was like this amazing thing, man.
It is. It's such a freeing moment, when you get on the air for the first time like that. And to this day, it still is for me. And I get a little, even before I even go out on stage anywhere, I still get a little nervous. I still get a little worked up. But it's that good positive energy. And that's, I think, is important.
Nothing like it. There's nothing like it, man. I mean, I like doing podcasts, but I'm getting better at it now, but it takes a lot for me to get, I do like a 20-minute like work, get myself worked up before I hit record.
Do you really? Because, yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes I'll just start rambling and record it, and then I'll chop off the first 10 minutes because that's the slow part, and then we get into it. Because it's hard, if it's not live, it's different when people are right there listening. It's just different.
Yeah.
The energy is different. Then you feed off of that, especially an audience.
Yeah, I do sort of the same. Well, I don't really edit any of the podcasts aside from adding maybe a little bit of audio in the front and the tail of it and throw some music on it. And for the most part, when I come in to sit down, I'll just take a deep breath and I don't really know where I'm going. I mean, there might be one thought or a bit of experience that I've had that hey, this is a good lead in. And then, I may start with that and end up with trout fishing. It doesn't, you don't really know where you're going with it. And not having that immediate feedback is kind of weird too, because you sort of feel like you're in a fishbowl and it's like, is anybody giving a shit? Does anybody listen to this? Are they paying attention? Do they care? And you talked openly about that, about the, the vitriol that people would lay out. And I laugh. I was telling my wife about it because she's also a fan of yours. And you know, it's like this is when Josh Robert Thompson went through his dark period, you know, and now you right. seem to have kind of come through that and you seem to be adjusting all right.
Yeah, the dark period. Yeah, it's funny. Part of me regrets taking all that shit down. I mean, I remember doing a podcast where I sort of apologized for posting all those things. And I don't really take back anything that I said. I mean, because, you know, people – when we do this shit, it's a diary of our lives, really. Yeah. I mean, you kind of open your life up a little bit. And I think for people to expect us to be positive all the time is really unrealistic and ultimately not very entertaining. I mean, that's what my new podcast that's going up is going to talk about. Like, do you would people prefer that I read letters and tweets that are positive for an entire episode? I mean, what? And then people, you know, hey, here's one from Mary Jane in Juneau, Alaska, who says you're great. All right, let's read another one. I mean, that's not. Yeah. That's not fun, you know. I want to read the one from the guy who says the horrible thing and then make fun of it. Yeah, that's more interesting to me. I don't get upset about it anymore. It's more funny to me now. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, you and I have kind of gone through those similar lines. I was part of a top-rated show in this market for many, many years here, and my partner in the morning show, he wound up getting leukemia and died, and I was blown out, and it was just a bad scene, and Some of the ugly shit that people will say and write, and it goes back to that, hey, I hope you have a backup plan, and it's like, you know, piss off, man. This is it. This is what I do. I'm either going to do it, I'm going to be successful at it, or you're going to carry me out of here feet first. And
that's the difference between someone who makes it or can make a living at it. You know, I think people confuse, like, being a celebrity or with making it. I mean, there's so many working actors and working broadcasters that you just don't know about, but they're making a living at it. I think that's all that matters. I'm not in this to be a megastar, but it does suck when people want to try to stop you. But, you know, that's their own. That's their own bullshit. I mean,
I think a lot of it's jealousy, you know, that they're miserable in their little 8-to-5 job. And, you know, they put in their, you know, 7 or 8 hours a day, and they take their paycheck every week and they blow it at the liquor store. Not that there's anything wrong with that, mind you.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, I got my bar back here. I'm ready to start. I think it's, what is it? It's almost noon, right?
Yeah, why not? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's how I cope.
Man. Yeah. It's true, man. There's a lot of people out there that gave up. There are a lot of people out there that gave up on what they wanted to do, whether – who knows what happened in their lives. You know, something happened that stopped them. But ultimately, they stopped themselves, and so they just get mad. And people don't like change. I mean, I'm experienced – right now I'm going through a weird period because there are a lot of – that's that demographic. Again, it's mostly the same kind of people – mostly women wearing, you know, leopard print shirts with the little perms, and they're like, yeah, I don't like this. You know, they don't like to know who the guy is behind the robot. It's very weird for them.
Yeah.
And they want me to be a certain kind of person, you know, just like, you know, it's just hard when you meet. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm a horrible person or an asshole, but I think when people hear me complain, they take it the wrong way. They don't understand that I'm sort of half mocking, half joking. You know, it's hard for people. It's hard for people. I get it.
Yeah.
But they don't have jerks about it.
Yeah. And that's sort of, you know, when I'm on the air live here at Radio Memphis, there's, and it's not like it's intentional, but there's this, I don't know, this character that is part of me, which is mostly me, but there's that misogynistic drunken bastard that gets on the air and he runs his mouth and he says horrible things and he says completely, you know, politically incorrect things. And, you know, you say what people are thinking sometimes and it gets the attention, but at the same time, you go out in public and you meet some of these folks and they're like, oh, it's you. You're an asshole. Let me buy you a drink. You know, some people that's like right. it and some people hate it, you know. So, I totally get it.
Howard Stern is the classic example. I mean, when I went out in 2003 and did his show, when I was in the studio, the old studio, he's just the nicest guy. I mean, he's just a laid back, very quiet dude who, you know, he enjoys his life and he's not a, you know. I mean, he's very good at what he does, but that on-air persona is very much not other than the, you know, self-loathing and the.
I can relate. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's but other than that, yeah, no, it's not like what people think. I like that. I like that it's different.
It's part of, I guess, being in this business. I'm nowhere way trying to compare myself to you by any means or anybody else out there. We're all different, but there is that bit of common ground where we have these dark sides to us that you want to kind of tantalize and play with a little bit and try and control it. I mean, some days I wake up and I lay there going, what's the point? You know, why am I doing this?
Sure.
And, you know, and then you force yourself into
that,
it.
Yeah, I think that now a lot. I'm like, well, what is it? If I stopped posting things on Facebook, if I just went away, if I was like, you know what, I'm going to stop my podcast today. How many people really would be like, hey, where'd that guy go? I mean, personally, I don't think it would be that many. I think it'd be like 10 dudes that would be like, I like that show.
It'd be 11, actually. I would.
Okay, 11. All right, 11.
Yeah, I'd have to track you down and say, Josh, come on, buddy. You know, get back into it. Crack the whip. You're almost there, man. You know, it's.
That'd be good. That's one person. There you go. But no, but that fear is there that, you know, you could just fade away, you know. But that's the voice that says you need to be a celebrity. You need to be known worldwide. You know, I just want to make some money.
You just want to make a living, right? You know, pay the rent, you know.
Yeah.
There's kind of a weird thing, and I probably should have explained this earlier on how I became a fan of yours. It wasn't just through your podcast. The day Craig Ferguson took over the Late Late Show is the exact same date that I took over an afternoon drive show here in Memphis. And it just, you know, I was a late night guy anyway. I've always watched late night television. I still do. And I was fascinated by the way Craig had created this show around it. And then you came in there with the whole Jeff the Robot thing. And I think there was a video, I want to say, I could have hallucinated this, but I think there was a video out there at some point of you in the studio cutting the lines for Jeff in a pre-recorded fashion. And they were trying to animate his mouth at the time. It was before it got, you know, before it was a full puppet. And
that's,
I was fascinated by how that worked. And you always say, you know, Google me, you don't know who I am. Which is exactly what I'd done before you even started saying it. And then I discovered your podcast and the stuff that you did with John Mariano and, you know.
Oh, yeah,
You know, the driving around stuff. I absolutely fell in love with the art that you're creating and, you know, from the show and even in outside of that. And I know it's been a weird kind of a difficult time without having the show because you've got to miss that grind, I would think, right?
Yeah, I miss the, you know, every day. It was just a good workout for me. I mean, you know, it didn't take up much of my day. And the truth is, I still do the other things that I was doing when I was doing the show, which was Family Guy. I think I go to Family Guy at least once a week and record voices for them, whatever they need.
Yeah.
And I do other voice work. That's what I was doing before. But yeah, it's you know, it was nice to go there and create something. I mean, all that stuff I sort of made myself out of thin air. The phone calls and
which were hilarious. I absolutely love that bit. Yeah,
thank you. I mean, I implemented that. Like, that was something that we started, you know. But I sort of spearheaded that. Like, you know, talked to the director and he got me a ringer that they set this button on the floor and I press it with my foot to make the phone ring. And he's like, this is it. This is a live thing. So when you press it, it's going to make a noise. It's live for the whole show. So during the whole show, I was like, my God, don't touch that ringer. I think I did it one time. And Craig was like, what's that? Is that the phone? You know, but that, I mean, the Shy Fellas band, the celebrity flies, we had different flies that would fly around the studio and I would do them in celebrity voice. I mean, this, I loved that I was able to shoehorn those things into this format and that they stuck. Craig appreciated it, I know, because the last 2 years, you know, he was he was ready to go. And I think he was ready to go a couple years ago, but they gave him the new studio and the bigger set and a little bit more moolah, and he was like, all right, I'll stick around. But that was a tough haul for those 2 years. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but I feel like I was given more room to play for those 2 years because Craig was like, you know what, let's have fun with it. You know, let's just do it.
Yeah. I guess when that decision is finally made and you're, you know, the pressure is off if you will, and now that real freedom of doing what you're going to do comes out. And it seemed like you guys had a hell of a run that last year. I mean, it was just loose. It was free. It was fun. It was everything that a show was supposed to be, in my opinion.
That's why I was sad. I think as we got closer to the end, it was becoming even more fun. We really sort of, we hit our stride. I mean, we really finally found our groove. We had it for a few years prior, but it was, the last year was really like a well-oiled machine. And I just don't think enough people were watching either. I mean, we had a lot of people watching, but not enough. You know, when people find out about the show that have never seen it before, they're blown away by the strangeness of it. They really like it. The talking robot and the horse secretariat and the rhino and Craig doing all these characters and puppets. It's just a weird show. It's a great show. I was very honored to be a part of it.
So Jeff, I guess, belongs to CBS then. He's in a box somewhere and you'll never get to play with him ever again, huh?
Actually, Jeff belongs to Craig now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Jeff and Secretariat are Craig's, and Jeff's one and two, because there was a Jeff that we had for the road when we did shows in other countries, and he is sitting comfortably in a retirement storage facility somewhere in Van Nuys. That's true.
Wow.
Yeah. So who knows? I know that plans for Craig's new syndicated show fell through. So that's, we're kind of nothing happening on that front right now.
Yeah.
But Jeff was going to be a part of that. There'll be something else down the road, I'm sure. And if not, I kind of like the idea that, you know, we went out and Jeff is in people's memories. It's kind of cool. But it'd be nice to have at least one. It'd be nice to have one robot, have it here at the house.
Well, get Grant on the horn, and maybe he can scare one up for you.
Maybe. Because I want to be like 85 years old, you know, sitting in my robe with my robe undone, drinking like a glass of gin and like playing with the remote control and telling like drunken stories to my grand. This is how I used to do this, you son of a bitch. You know? All right, Grandpa, that's enough.
That's enough. Right. Put the box down.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Speaking of Craig, you're doing some stuff on the road with him. You guys are doing a bunch of shows, right?
Yeah, man. We got a massive tour, the Hot and Grumpy Walking the Earth Tour. I've been touring with Craig for a couple of years now, and we're going to be playing everywhere. He's recording his new special as we go. I think we're going to shoot that in New York. It's going to be about 2 months, February and March. And in the interim, March 4th, is my TV, my stand-up debut on the Late Late Show with Drew Carey.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, the story that you tell, I'm glad you brought that up, because both you and Drew are from Cleveland, and he was very instrumental to your career in an inspiring way, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was 24 years ago. I remember I was Johnny Carson I watched, every night kid.
Yeah.
I mean, who didn't? I think everybody watched that. It was the best show ever in the world, and he, and here's this Drew Carey guy, and we all knew in town, everybody knew that he was from Cleveland, and that he was making his debut on Carson. And it was like, there I am, sitting in my house in Parma, Ohio, and I'm like, so a dude can get out of here. You can get out of this town and go and make it. But how? How did he do it? How did he get inside that TV? So it was cool, like all these years later, to be asked by Drew Carey to come on and make my stand-up debut on TV when he was the host. It was really, and Peter LaSalle is the producer of the Late Late Show, one of the producers, the executive producer.
Yeah.
Who was Johnny Carson's producer.
Right,
so,
right.
Kind of a nice, everything's sort of cyclical. It all comes back, I guess. And it was cool. It's an amazing experience, man. I was a shitting bricks before I went out. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, how am I,
Yeah.
But the audience was great. I really hope it plays. I'm sure they're going to air it, but, you know, you get nervous because, I mean, we shot that thing so long ago, and now I got to wait till March. What the hell, man? But that's Late Late Show fashion right there. That's CBS style right there.
And I'm sure that terrifying, nervous feeling, though, it was an energy that you could work off. And, of course, having an audience that respected it and really dug it, too, was a big part of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think what I was worried about was the fact that, for me personally, I put more pressure on myself, I think, than anybody else because, oh, now it's like, oh, here's the guy that was the robot. And people are like, okay, let's see what this guy can do. Let's see how you do without the robot now, you know, smart ass. That's how I feel everybody in the audience is thinking, you know. That was the story I told on my podcast which is another bit I'm working on, where there was a kid every day in junior high that would punch me in the arm. He would give me one punch in the arm every day in homeroom.
Yeah.
And then at some point I made him laugh, and that became my defense mechanism for the rest of my life. And basically this kid said to me, as long as you continue to make me laugh, I will not punch you in the arm. And I feel like that is how I feel when I do comedy shows. I see that kid's feathered hair and little Fu Manchu mustache from junior. I see him in the audience. He is everyone in the audience going, all right, we won't punch you in the arm if you make us laugh. You know, that's kind of how I feel. Not really, but that's kind of the joke of it is.
It's working with a gun held to your head is what it sounds
that's
like.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't like you. We don't like you at all. Because when comedians come out, look, when I did the Late Late Show and I would be hidden behind the wall doing the robot, you know, waiting for to say something, and then it would be the comedian would come on for the night. I mean, everybody in the crew, as soon as the comic comes out, would say, oh, who's this jackass? Let's see what this guy does.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, who's, all right, who's this guy?
Let's give him a shot. Yeah, let's see what he's got.
What is he going to do? And then, you know, that's why I started doing impressions, because when I come out on stage, and as soon as that Morgan Freeman comes out of my mouth, the audience is like, oh, all right, we're on this guy. Let's listen to this guy.
Were there ever people in the studio that would peep over the wall and see you there with the rig and the headphones?
Yeah.
And they had to have been kind of blown away a little bit. It's like, oh shit, the magic is out, right?
Yeah, they would do weird things. Mostly women would, you know, these dragon ladies, these I call them chicken ladies. Oh, they would lean over and go, oh, hi, Josh. Hello there. And then they would, you know, then they'd say to their friends, he's down there. Oh, he's reading something. Oh, well, that's not all improv. And I'm like, okay, now you're heckling me.
Yeah.
Just let me do my, you know, because I had a laptop during the show that I would write down some intros, like commercial break stuff.
Yeah.
And tweet mail stuff, just to have it. It was all generic stuff. I had them listed like generics or Friday show, Thursday show. But I hardly ever used those, because then during the show, I would take something funny that Craig said and just write it down and make note of it.
So you wouldn't
forget
it.
And then maybe use it later.
Yeah.
So yeah, but this woman was like yelling at me, saying, you know, you're writing things out, you're typing things out. This is a lie. And I'm like, no, it's not a lie. Like, yeah, and there's a teleprompter with the Craig's not even looking at the audience. He's looking directly at the camera, because that's the teleprompter with the monologue that we never get to, because, you know, he reads like two lines of that and he's like, all right, the hell with it, let's just talk about something. So you know.
you and Craig never really would sit down before a show and say, hey, we're going to do this or this. I mean, it was strictly ad lib, wasn't it?
Yeah, we tried for a couple weeks. He invited me to sit in the makeup room with him in his dressing room, basically. But then we found that we were joking around in the dressing room, and then we would never do those bits again. Like, as soon as we did the bit in the dressing room,
it's done. It's over.
We were already bored. And we were like, oh, well, all right. Yeah, he said, yeah, dude, let's do that when you go out there. Let's do that. Make sure you say that. And then we tried, and it was just like, no, this isn't going to work. So he said, look, man, you know, let's just do this where we come out and the first time we talk to each other is when the cameras roll and, you know, he comes out. So much better. Because then you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen. I legitimately have no idea what we're going to do.
When you guys are out on the road, is there any point in the show where the two of you are on stage together working like that?
Yeah, that's our favorite. I mean, it's really fun. At the end of the show, I come back out and Secretariat, Joseph and Ryan, and they we do like a tweet mail, like a viewer mail segment. But we take questions and answers with the audience, and that usually devolves, depending on the city you're in, into drunken madness. And Craig will say, if we only take one question, you know that Craig, he wants to go. He'll say, all right, everybody, have a great night. All right, Josh Robert Thompson, all right, get off the stage. All right, goodbye. You know, because let's get out of here before it gets crazy.
Before it gets completely unruly.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
I see you guys are going to be fairly close to Memphis, but I haven't seen Memphis on the list yet. This is a weird town, but I think you guys are going to be playing Nashville sometime in March.
Nashville. Yeah, let me look at the dates here. They're adding more dates. It's so many dates, man. I mean,
yeah.
I think we're all going to, we all like each other, but we're probably gonna kill each other at the end of this tour. I mean, that's a lot of time to be with. That's a sausage fest for almost 2 solid months.
Yeah, gets a little old. Yeah.
We'll see what happens, but yeah, New York's gonna be great, man. I love. We're hitting a lot of great cities, and New York will be there for about, I don't know, four days, I think, 5 days, and then on my birthday, March 11th, we'll be in New Orleans. We have a free day in New Orleans, so that's not a bad way to go.
Yeah, that'll be a big time down there.
Yeah, I may pass away, so if I, with the drinking, I apologize in advance to the New Orleans audience if I'm half in the bag on stage.
Hey, everything is half in the bag in New Orleans,
Yeah, I think it's going to be okay.
When Katrina happened, it seemed like 2/3 of the city of New Orleans moved into Memphis, and a good number of these people wound up staying here. So we have that, and it's a whole different world down there. Those people are very, very different.
Yeah, man. Yeah, when we did our special there, we did our Super Bowl special there a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
that was very interesting. I remember I was at the Absinthe bar on Bourbon Street, and I was talking to this one lovely young lady who really wanted to talk to me, and the whole crew is there, and Tim, the director, he's like, "Hey, Josh, come on, buddy, let's go." And I had quite a few drinks, and he said, we should probably get back to the hotel, man. No, I'm talking to this girl. She likes me. And then Lisa, the makeup, the hair girls are coming over. Hey, Josh, why don't you come back now? No, this is my friend. So then this woman and I are walking back to the hotel, and she says, okay, so it's $500 for me. Son of a bitch. $1,000 for my friend. I'm like, well, what's your friend look like? No. So that's pretty much what was happening there. Yeah, good times in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. Have a good birthday when you're down that way.
Oh, no. God, no. I'm not. I mean, first of all, I was like, $500? Are you crazy? Oh, my God. Whew.
Yeah, your black character you made mention of about how some people thought that was sort of racist, and in Memphis, which is a weirdly polarized town as it is, I'm sure would do very well here, to be honest with you, because I know how you play it out.
That's funny, man, that you say that, because the two characters that do really well there or in the South, and you'd think that they wouldn't, the preacher character and Darnell Jenkins, my black character.
Yeah.
It's okay. People are totally fine with it because you're not going on stage and you're not saying hateful, racist things. It's not racist. It's a character, and it's such a lovable dude. Hey, what's up, y'all? I ain't got no time for this bullshit. I love that guy so much, and I'm probably going to be him for a full podcast episode. I want to do one podcast episode like Andy Kaufman style where I do like a 2-hour show and never break character and just try to, like an endurance run, see how long you can listen to the show. This was terrible. It'll mean the world to me. Hey, what's up, Darnell Jenkins, everybody? We got a great show for you today. You know how it is. I mean, I grew up in Cleveland with dudes like that that I knew for years, and I just love that voice. So,
Kaufman, was Kaufman a big influence to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little too young to have caught him when he first started on SNL, But obviously, I watched the old footage, and I caught Andy Kaufman, you know, like the mid '80s. I remember that's when he came on the map for me. He did that weird movie, Heartbeats, where he played a robot in this weird metallic, like shiny looking makeup, and then I saw that, and then he was doing wrestling stuff. He was always wrestling. Jerry Lawler was calling him out on Letterman.
Oh yeah,
I loved that. That's when I noticed him. I was like, "Oh, this guy got in a fight with this dude," and then I learned that it was a put on, or was it? And I like that mystique of, is he dead? Is he not dead? They still keep that going every couple of years. Bob Zemuda comes out, his buddy, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't, you know, Andy's supposedly alive." I think that's brilliant. That's my favorite kind of comedy, the kind that makes people uncomfortable. They don't really know what to do with that. That's good stuff.
Jerry Lawler is a friend of mine, and I run into him. Yeah, he is. He lives here in Memphis, and I run into him every once in a while, and to hear him tell some of those stories about how much fun it was to work with Andy, and you know, and just how good Andy was about all of that, and Lawler fucked him up pretty good in the ring, and of course these wrestling fans down here at the time, they're rabid about that kind of thing, and they just fell in love with Jerry right out of the chute. You know, it's like, take this guy out, you know, and of course Kaufman is just eating it up. You know, he was glad to be the foil.
Yeah, that's right. Kaufman was insulting everybody in the audience, and they're like, "Oh, you son of a bitch!" And I like that too. I don't know what that is, but that thing of pissing the audience off. Sometimes I go out, but the preacher mostly will do shit. And people getting worked up, and I'm like, "Oh, that's right, yeah, you're going to hell, man. You can all kiss my ass because you're all going to burn in hell." Oh, then they start, and then they kind of realize that we're joking around, but then they get into it. "You're going to burn in hell. No, you, man, you're going to hell right now. I can feel the flames around your buttocks." And, you know, people, you know, you get all worked up about it. But it's funny to me. I don't know why. I don't know. I like that movie that they made about Andy Kaufman, Man on the Moon.
Yes, yes.
There's a scene in that where young Andy, as a kid, is in his bedroom by himself, staring at a wall and pretending that the wall is an audience. And he's saying, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen." And he's on his bed, and his dad comes in, and he's like, "The hell are you doing?" And I'm like, if that happened at my house, like on a daily basis. There was one time I was pretending I built a spaceship out of a cardboard box. And I was playing my John Williams Star Wars orchestral score on cassette tape. And I had Christmas lights that I poked holes in the cardboard and made like a fake computer console with just, you know, Christmas lights. Like they would do on Star Trek, like just cheesy lights in the mirror.
Sure.
And my dad just walked by my bedroom. The door was open. He just walked by and he shook his head. And then he just kept walking, you know. So... But that's what I did. Like those are the things that I was doing, and I'm still doing it. I mean, the podcast is really what I was doing in my bedroom when I was a kid, recording shit into a tape recorder and pretending to be other people. I can't believe that that's like I'm still doing that. It's really fascinating to me.
It is kind of fun to look back on it. My parents did the same thing. They gave me a tape recorder, which was their biggest mistake, because as soon as I had told them when I was a little more of age that I was entering into the broadcast business, it was like, "No, you're not going to do this. You're going to go get a job and be an engineer. You're going to college. You're going to be good at math. You're going to do something else. Don't get into show business." And of course I did, and they bitched and they whined and moaned about that. But the second you get some type of accolade, my mother's always going, "Oh, I knew you could do it." You know,
that's right.
You know, right behind it.
Yeah, I always believed it. Well, it's funny because my dad is, my mom too, but my dad is really my biggest champion. I mean, my stepdad, I mean, he's my dad. I mean, I've known him since I was a child, really. And he's just so blown away by all of this. But now, you know, he says it's like I'm back in high school again, because the other day he said, "Well, you have to start cutting corners now. The show's over, you know, you have to start tightening the belt." And I'm like, "Dude, it's only been a month. It's fine."
Right.
I mean, I did all right on the show. "Yeah, you know, I don't know. You're going to have to start thinking it. Like, what's your next move going to be?" Like, I don't know. Just relax.
Yeah.
You got to do something. You got to do, you know, maybe it's not going to. And then, you know, another friend of mine said, "Well, you know, I talked to a psychic and I mentioned your name." And I said, "Oh, really?" "Yeah." And the psychic said, you're gonna get some work soon. It's not necessarily going to be in the field that you want, but you will make money. And I'm like, what the hell is that? But McDonald's? Where am I going to work? It's very funny. It's funny the shit that people say when you, in this business, because yes. if someone else lost their job and I said, hey, you know, if you don't ever work again, at least you worked. I mean, people would be like, you know what, man, you're an asshole.
Yeah, go fuck yourself. Yeah. That's a horrible thing to say. Yeah, at least you had a job. What's your backup plan, Rick? If I had a dollar for every time somebody said that to me, I that would have been my backup plan, you know?
Your backup plan. That's funny. Yeah, if you had a dollar, you'd be a billionaire right now.
Pretty much. Because it's that whole, you know, well, you know, at least you had that. And, oh, I totally relate when you've made that comment. And it's just, in a way, it's scary to hear it again coming from somebody else's point of view, but I feel better, and I know there's plenty of other listeners out there that would also feel better about it. And you know,
that's good. I'm glad you said that. That is the reason that I do share those things on the podcast, because for every one person, and there are very few, who get upset by those things or say, you know, I'm tired of this negativity, I'm just sharing the realities of this kind of work. And I find that a lot of people respond to that just like you are, and they say, man, okay, I'm glad I'm not alone. I mean, I was sharing stuff about having panic attacks, and that was a while ago on the podcast. And I've since taken some of those things down because, I don't know, for whatever reason, I just decided I didn't want all that stuff floating out there. But I did talk about depression. I did an episode a few episodes back where I talked about being depressed, and so many people. That was like the most listened to show that I did recently.
Yeah.
That's like 15,000 plays on that one on SoundCloud, which for me is really good. And that's because it resonated with people. People were like, oh, thank God, it's not just me. So
yeah,
that's good, man. I can help people. That's good.
That's an important thing. That's what keeps me doing it, to be frank with you, whether I, you know, get somebody to crack a smile or get angry or, you know, get some type of response out of some people. I enjoy that. I just don't like the negative drama that comes with that sometimes. And I think that's just, you know, I guess the cross we all bear.
It is funny, man. Like the fans, I got to say, to their credit, they're very, this guy that posted the other day announcing that he was unfollowing me because he thought that I was boring, and he said something like, it was really fun, he said something like, you know, wait until you have interesting life experiences and then you can come back and talk about yourself, but right now it's self-indulgent. And I was like, dude, it's my page. Like, I don't know who else. Who am I going to talk about? You? Do you want to?
Right.
I mean, I don't know what you want me to do. But I responded to him rather well. I wasn't, you know, like, fuck you or anything like that. And then, I don't even know why I responded, but then, like, so many, I mean, these people just tore this guy a new asshole. There was a guy making memes of this guy's face and, like, calling him a child molester, and then I had to go like, okay, whoa, everybody, guys, like, you know, because then the guy was like, I'm going to sue you people for defamation of character. I'm like, okay, all right, let's all
calm down. Let's take a moment. Yeah, it's,
you know what I mean?
It's just real entertainment. Sad. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I think, but it was nice to know that that many people had my back. That was kind of cool. But you know.
Well, you know, hey, everybody in the audience are experts in show business, aren't they? No matter what they do for a living. Yes.
Everybody, that again, that's the point of where we're at now with the Facebook and the YouTube and the Vine, and everybody's a star now. Everybody. Like Andy Warhol's theory of the 15, everybody gets 15 minutes of fame. I mean, his head would implode at the nightmare world that has been created. I mean, on one hand, it's good because you have more venues and places to share your talent, but it's also terrible because really talented people, I feel, for the most part, get totally overshadowed. But it's no different than the real business. It's like shitty movies make a lot of money and the great ones don't necessarily, and that's just how it's always been. But everybody's a star now. Everybody's a star and you're in your own living room. You can be a star, but I think the cream rises at the top still. It doesn't, you know, that shit doesn't last long.
Oh, I agree. So. You know, in the weird world of internet radio that I run in, the, you know, part of the problem is that you can't swing a dead cat out there without hitting somebody who's a disc jockey, or, you know, they're playing punk records down their mom's basement, and they think that they've got it going on, and they don't have any real radio experience, and they don't know how to deal with it. So eventually all that, you know, is going to choke out of there and be gone, and let us professionals think we know what we're doing and have some more fun with it.
But everyone's got a podcast. I mean, even my ex from like 10 years ago, she has a new podcast, and I was her first guest on her show. In fact, I helped record it. I brought my own equipment. I was like the engineer on the show. And so I posted her show the other day on my page, and I was like, "Hey, everybody, so my ex had me on her new podcast. What could possibly go wrong?" And her podcast, that post got more likes than my own episode of my podcast that I posted the same day. I was like, man, what the hell, man? She's much better looking than me, so I get it. But everyone's doing a show. Everybody, you know.
Yeah, it's consistency is what I've learned is, you know, if you keep creating, constantly laying it out there on a somewhat of a regular basis, your audience tends to stick around a little bit. You know, whether they don't like a particular episode, they'll wait long enough to see what the next one is.
Yeah, that's, I agree with you. That's kind of, I'm getting in the habit of doing that now and cranking them out because, you know, right now it's weird because there's about 30,000 or so people on the Facebook page and also 34,000, I don't know, 24,000, I don't know, on Twitter. But each of these episodes only gets like a couple thousand plays. So you're kind of like, where is everybody? And I think the audience is growing and branching off of that old demographic that was the Late Late Show people. I feel like that's what we're seeing. Because there's still people that were around from the Howard Stern days, and they used to watch my public access stuff. So it's not just the Late Late Show people. But those as soon as I changed my main picture on Facebook from me and the robot to just me, I looked at the stats on my Facebook, and the day that I changed the photo, like, you know, 40 people left.
Wow.
Because they're like, what is this? I don't know. What is this guy?
When did I like this hump?
Fine. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Well, sure. You know, when anytime there's a big change in your life and, you know, in your career, and it's public like that, it's going to settle out. And I think personally, I think there'll be more and more people that'll discover what you're doing. And I really do think that what you're working with here, this whole new show that you've got in the can, hopefully eventually, will really be cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And you're right. Because there's a kid named Jamie Costa or Jamie Costa. I think it's Jamie Costa. He is a supremely, frighteningly good impressionist. He's a young guy living in, I think he's in North Carolina, I think. Anyway, he's got a big Vine following, massive. And he asked me about a week ago to be one of three judges to judge this impression contest on Vine, and my first reaction was, oh god, is this what it's come to? But no, I said, sure, yeah, no, absolutely, dude. And he posted a video of the three judges introducing ourselves, and as soon as he did that, I got thousands and thousands and thousands of people from his fan base, had never heard of me before, had never looked at one of my Vine videos, and just so many wonderful compliments from young people who were like, oh my god, you even look like De Niro when you do it. And I'm like, yeah, that's the idea, you know. And but it was great. That is the point, is that audience is sitting out there, they just haven't found it yet. They just, it's so hard to sift through all the noise to find that thing. So that meant a lot to me that he did that, and that those people, you know, found that. It was really cool.
Yeah, I tell the guys that work here at the radio station, you know, because I like to give some of these kids a chance to broadcast. They've always had a fascination for it. It's like, all right, look, I'll help you out. I'll give you a shot at it. But I always remind them, you don't know who's listening. So, you know, you just don't know. There might be you'll do something and the phone might ring. And it's like, hey, I heard what you did. How about you do this, that, and the other, you know, and I'm going to offer you this. So you have to be conscious of that. And I tell these kids that all the time. And that's a great point to illustrate with, is what these kids.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's partly why with the podcast, I took down a bunch of episodes where I was sort of taking a stance against ever doing impressions again, because, you know, like if somebody in the industry was listening to that, they would kind of go, Well, I guess that's too bad. We're going to offer him this major job on this film, but I guess he doesn't want to do that anymore. But yeah, also, you don't know who's listening in the sense that, like, this guy, Bridger, who used to work on The Late Late Show, Bridger is incredible on Twitter. Like, his tweets are so funny. I mean, it's unbelievable, the one-liners and the amazing scenarios. And Jimmy Kimmel direct messaged him personally on Twitter and said, I want you to come work for me. And now he's a writer over at Jimmy Kimmel based
Fantastic.
On his tweets.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I think 5 years ago, I would probably have been like, that's bullshit. You got to work for, you know. But, you know, that's the new way. It's like, if you got the talent and it's out there, people will see it. And that's how I got a job doing insurance commercials on camera in the UK for a couple of years. I was a spokesperson for More Than Insurance, and I was More Than Freeman. Hello, everybody. And I talk like Morgan Freeman. And they found me because of a YouTube video that I did back in 2009.
Wow.
They were looking for a white dude that could sound like Morgan Freeman.
What a pigeonhole they put you in.
I know. Like, that's a very specific thing you're looking for. I mean, I think I can help you guys with that. But you're right. I mean, I don't know. I'm expecting a phone call very soon from, you know, Steven Spielberg. So I'll let you guys know when that happens.
I'll work it from my end. I know some people that I don't know. I'll do what I can, you know.
I understand. Well, I appreciate it. No, I'd say, you know, I'm realizing now with the online community that we're all helping each other out. Like on Vine, I will revine or favorite other people's videos, and then they'll revine my stuff, and then same with Twitter. And I'm sort of starting to get into the game. It's not really like it's all mine. You got it.
Right.
It's kind of like, and I do communicate more with fans. You know. On Twitter and Facebook, not the haters, but I genuinely try to answer people's questions when I can, and I think people like that, and then it's reciprocal, so it's good. It's good to do that. If anybody's listening that's trying to get into this, it's a good idea to sort of keep in touch with the people that like your work.
Well, yeah, it's important, and if it wasn't for that, you and I wouldn't have had this conversation. So I appreciate
right.
you doing that. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, no, that's really cool, man. Yeah, I know. That's funny. It's interesting to be doing this because I remember seeing you would post a lot of supportive and funny comments, so it's cool that we're, you know, doing this, man.
Yeah,
so thank you.
I've got a few years on you, not that it matters a whole lot, but I've been there. I've felt what you have felt, and I get it. You know, we're all in that same boat together, and I really do appreciate your work, and I think more and more people will too. And your attitude here of late has, you know, I sound like an ass by saying that, but it's really neat to see you grow and become that strong character that you are,
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to break out into my preacher character. I think we all need to just bow, you know, pray for more women in our lives. Certainly in my life, I'd like just a couple naked chicks and maybe like a bathtub situation. God, please grant me 2 naked chicks and maybe a bowl of grapes. Amen. Amen.
Amen.
What?
What?
What, man? That's what I said, man. I want 2 chicks and grapes. I know. I heard you. All right.
Here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland. And it's a tough call. It's a tough sell. I get it. I totally understand it. And for us to hang in there and make it work this far has been nothing short of miraculous. I will tell you that. They have every right to say and feel those things because of what corporate radio has done to the industry. It's sad. It's horrible. We have watched with great interest the evaporation of the terrestrial audience. In the past, we would sit there and we'd go, well, okay, we're not number one right now, but where did those numbers go? And you'd look for the other stations that benefited from it, and you see that they didn't either. They didn't benefit from your loss. And so the corporate guys would chalk it up to, well, we're competing against the iPod. We're so close on the verge of making the agencies understand that this is something that is not going away.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
If you ever get down here to Memphis, I'll take you over to a couple of the churches that are around here that you would fall in love with immediately. You know, Al Green, he runs a church down here, and it's a trip.
Oh, I definitely got to do that, dude. That's my favorite thing to do, is to go to these churches. I will go to all black churches, I love it. And they're just like, come on in now, come on there, come on now, don't be shy. All right, nobody, I said, you just get into the thing. I don't know what it, I mean, I grew up Catholic, but I don't really go to church anymore. I wouldn't consider myself a religious man, but there's just something about it that I think, it's just so much fun. I mean, I watch Trinity Broadcast Network as much as I can. Anytime there's a preacher doing an infomercial or selling miracle water or the blood of Christ, which is just like a packet of, you know, ketchup or something.
Right.
I always call as Apostle BG. I call the number and I have a box full of all this shit that they send me, and I love it. I love it, man.
That is awesome.
The best. Still hawking the wear. Anyway, that's all I got.
Bob Tilton's my
what's that?
Bob Tilton. He was a guy that would sit there and speak in tongues, and
yeah,
he would come right out and say, just give me $1,000, we can make it work with $1,000. You just come right out.
That's what they would say if you want the garden to grow, you've got to sow the seed.
Yeah.
And this seed you must sow is $10,000. If we sow that seed tonight, just $10,000 is all I need. Call now. I'm making some dough, those guys. Maybe that's what I'm going to do. Maybe that's what I'll do next. Yeah,
why not? Josh, thank you so very much for your time. I appreciate everything that you're doing, and I appreciate the time that you, you know.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it, man.
And if there's anything I can ever do to help you out, you know, down the way, now that we've got this Google Hangout thing figured out, just let me know. I'll be more than happy to help you out.
I will indeed, man. I definitely appreciate that, and thanks for your support. And this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Josh.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care. Once again, my thanks to Josh Robert Thompson. If you want to know more, look for jrtvoices.com. Yep, he's got his podcast there, too. It's a great show. It's very funny. A lot of the previous episodes that he has up there are just absolutely wonderful and magical if you're into that sort of sense of humor. This is the guy who has really been an inspiration to me and this show, for us to pass it on to you. And hopefully here in the next few weeks, we'll be starting to bring in some more of these interviews, and we'll have some fun with it. And I don't know what happened there toward the end. There was sort of this weird echo, and I don't know. It happens. That's the way it goes. I don't edit much of anything. It's just what we do. So once again, thank you for being a part of this program. For more, you can find us at radio-memphis.com. The home of this is at rickcheddar.blogspot.com. And you can find it all right there through iTunes and wherever else that you go to subscribe to your podcast. So there you have it. I'm done. I'm out of here. Yep, I'm Rick Cheddar. And this has been From Radioland.